Be still and know that I am God. Be still and know that I am. Be still and know. Be still. Be.
Be still and know that I am God. Be still and know that I am. Be still and know. Be still.
Be.
Be still and know that I am God. Be still and know that I am. Still and know, be still, be.
Thank you. So here we all are, centered and quieted with that focus and chant that we've just experienced together. This is the threshold of awareness that most people of faith talk about as they seek to become present to the presence of the divine. And we're all gathered here this morning to learn how to step across this threshold and move into a larger life that awaits us. However, we've pretty much been taught to approach this kind of awareness through a kind of careful intellectual attention that we bring to the encounter. But wisdom operates on a much wider bandwidth of awareness. It involves activating the intelligence of the body and the heart, as well as using our mental capacity. Chapter 3 of our Wisdom Way study is entitled Three Centered Knowing. And there is no one better to explore this transformational work than Dr. Mary Ann Evans. Mary Ann is a neuropsychologist in Santa Barbara, is a neuropsychologist with a rich and varied career in psychological and educational arenas that spans a period of over 50 years. She specializes in work with individuals who experience emotional, social, medical, and learning challenges. She's presented her innovative work on brain plasticity and transformation at conferences in the US and around the world. She has been a neuropsychologist in Santa Barbara, there we are, since 1989. She's been worked at the Rehabilitation Institute, the Behavior Wellness Center, as well as a rich private practice. Her work in personal healing and transformation is embodied through her dedication to partnering with horses in her program, Horse Wisdom for the Soul. Her spiritual journey has encompassed the exploration of many contemplative traditions, and she was most recently a student in Richard Rohr's Center for Action and Contemplation in their Living School. She has spent 20 years as a dedicated student in the Christian wisdom tradition. Her deepest spiritual awakening has come through resonance with Cynthia Bourgeault's teachings about the heart of Christianity. Now, I speak with some authority about Mary Ann's remarkable life, and you only caught a glimpse here of her amazing doings because I've been privileged to watch it up close. As a friend, as a teaching partner, and as a fellow spiritual adventurer over 40 years. And what's been most fascinating in our recent years together is the evolutionary power of the wisdom journey as it keeps changing our lives by calling more and more of our being into play. As Cynthia writes at the beginning of chapter 3, by following the wisdom path, we practice a methodology that increases our receptivity to higher meaning by raising the level of our own being. So let us sing to Mary Ann our collective blessing song as she steps forward to guide us into three-centered knowing. So if you raise your hands and sing with us.
We bless you as you share your gifts of spirit, light, and insight. We welcome you with joy.
The podium is yours, Marianne.
Thank you, dear friend. What a joy to have you introduce me and to just recall the years we've spent together, you as my spiritual mentor. Thank you very much. So before we begin, I'd like to offer a prayer as we gather together in our mutual desire to experience this teaching from Cynthia's book, Wisdom Path of Knowing. And let's just take a moment and bow our heads. Lord, make me an instrument of your love. May I become a worthy container to hold and transmit the brilliant, blazing beams of your divine love. So I'm filled with joy as we continue to delve into this study, this remarkable book. It may seem a little bit confusing to some of you that aren't perhaps familiar with Cynthia's work to talk about what is this three-centered knowing? What is this all about? And so I would like to try to unpack that for you today, starting with kind of a broader view, a broader lens of perception, as we come from this stance of embodiment, presence, and a new way of seeing. And I'm going to try to take us along this path and help us to understand the why and the how of human purpose as it undergirds this whole three-centered way of knowing. So beginning, I'd like to talk about my understanding of the why. I think we've all asked that question, why am I here? And it's my belief, and over the years, I've just come to know that this, for me, it's my own truth, that we're here to consciously bear the beams of God's love by becoming fully alive moment by moment. Now, this wisdom begins with a childlike wonder and openness, as Father Clark so eloquently described last week. But it's not just about personal transformation. It's also about how we play our part in holding the suffering of the world in the service of love and cosmic transformation. Cynthia speaks to the ancient embodied contemplative practices that have long been the passageway into the state of wholeness, of presence. We are amphibian people with a leg in two worlds, the finite and formless infinite, that of the everyday horizontal material world, just maintaining our physical survival, and the other higher, less dense spiritual world on the vertical axis that Matthew so beautifully described as the intersection of the cross. As we typically may only be able to maintain this conscious state of being in two worlds momentarily, yet we're called to play our part in increasing our capacity to bear this divine love and transmit it back into the world in the service of divine evolution, moving toward that omega point so beautifully described by Pierre Teilhard. And Cynthia speaks to our spiritual practices as having to do with strengthening our human nervous system that is so elegantly designed to bear this higher energetic force of love. When God's higher density, intensity of divine love, often called grace, hits us in this mortal world, it's a lot for our physical bodies to bear. It's much as if we look directly at the sun without sunglasses. Our nervous system is sensitive and fragile, and we must go carefully and slowly into heart perception. And it is through our willingness to stand in the face of suffering that we can develop the strength that allows us to choose surrender into relationship with God. Only eyes that are washed with tears see God. So it is important for us to strengthen and balance our three centers of knowing in order to hone and fine-tune our bodies into vessels that will raise this energetic level of being and be able to receive the gifts of spirit from a higher source. Again, as our dear Matthew writes so eloquently described, there are twin banks along the river, the stream of wisdom, allowing it to flow freely. And those are the forces of attention, standing strong, and the gesture of surrender, letting go. Today, my task is to focus primarily on that force of attention, standing firm in the face of suffering, and the forces of entropy in this world. My friend, dear friend, John Draper, will focus on the twin gesture of surrender as he discusses chapter 6 later on in our series. And I would like to speak to this notion of three-centered knowing through the lens of presence as we consider these teachings. Cynthia is emphatic in insisting that real wisdom can only be given and received in a state of presence, with all three of our centers engaged and awake. The vessel of our human body must be well tuned in order to hold the fullness and amplitude of divine love wanting to pour through. Again, I repeat, we are here to bear the beams of God's love. Perhaps we can think of Icarus flying too close to the sun without sufficient strength in his wings to bear the blazing sun. He fell back to earth, asleep. We have an obligation to participate in receiving and transmitting this divine love in the service of maintaining the evolution of the planet into divine love. But we first have to strengthen our capacity to hold this blazing love energy, or we fall asleep. Teilhard posited that divine love is evolutionary and human activity is essential to complete this deepest intention of God's love. By creating creation, bringing creation to fulfillment, and we as humans will complete this yearning of God's love for us. We are evolution made conscious beings, and therefore need to yield to greater bonds of love, promoting unity in creation. The purpose of the divine journey into form is to make manifest the fullness of love. Love bears all things, believes all things, and hopes all things, and endures all things. And that is where our strength comes in. And our wisdom practices are here to help us embody this presence of love. And Cynthia says, presence is the gateway through which one passes to wisdom. Rather than being trapped in our usual mind, we come from a deeper place. We are present in the words of wisdom tradition, fully occupying the now in which we find ourselves. So we have been incarnated in this human container to receive, refine, and transmit this flow of divine love through our embodied presence. Our hearts are electromagnetic fields that require a balanced and voluntary attention. And we can do this through our everyday experiences, noticing the sensations in our bodies, which are the interface between the outer and the inner, and they lead us into conscious presence. And when we come from full presence, we live in that energetic field of love. Think of the violin in the hands of a musician. It begins merely as a lovely container of possibility, but through the active relationship with the living body of the musician who tunes it and practices until it becomes animated, alive with the energy of vibrational sound that can lift our hearts and souls into higher frequencies of beings. We are not merely love's passive instruments, but its servants. We come from a deeper, steadier, quieter place, fully occupying the now. And it is from this fully embodied state of presence that Jesus lived and taught. And it's been said in our studies and in our work through Cynthia most recently that these diaphanous appearances following the resurrection may be understood as coming from an even higher energetic state beyond the laws of this material world, a state of love manifested, sometimes called the second body. So we recognize that we're living within this infinite heart of God, and the whole universe is a manifestation of divine love. In the Sufi tradition, it is said, "I was a hidden treasure and I longed to be known. So I created both worlds, the visible and the invisible, in order that my hidden treasure of generosity and loving kindness would be known. We live in this ocean of love, but we need to be shocked, sometimes hurt, or even suffer loss in order to be aware of this, to tap into this underground river of mercy. It appears that the intentional use of suffering is a necessary condition for us to be shocked into this higher state of knowing, according to Richard Rohr's teachings. It blows apart the limited view of seeing from categories and judgments. Love is conscious relationship in presence. We must become love in order to fully love. When we're in presence, we hold no image of ourselves as separate from others. We hold no defenses. We come naked as our true selves. We recognize the stranger as ourselves. It is in our self-disclosure, our emotional nakedness, that we hold open the space for love. And being in presence is a state of transcendent awareness. Without this state, we are not wholly here, merely existing in our thoughts, desires. We can't really love when we're not really here. So I would like to just think about the notion of our three-centered awareness that allows us to strengthen our vessels and help us contain this higher energetic state. And here it is that we become able to bear the beams of God's love and send it back into the world, simultaneously holding firm and surrendering in a state of reciprocal exchange. And Tim, could you put up that lovely little picture of the water wheel? Just listen to these words from Rumi using this image of the water wheel. He describes the stance of attention, the ecstasy of staying strong and embodied in order to contain the flowing river of wisdom. Stay together, friends. Don't scatter and sleep. Our friendship is made of being awake. The water wheel accepts water and turns and gives it away, weeping. That way it stays in the garden, whereas another roundness rolls through a dry riverbed, looking for what it thinks it wants. Stay here, quivering with each moment, like a drop of mercury. This lovely, lovely little poem speaks to containment as well as letting go. You can take it down now, Kim. As I reflect on Cynthia's teachings in chapter 3, I can only filter them through my own lived experience. I'm not a theologian, not a priest, just a simple, bumbling human trying to make sense of my short journey here on this earth. All I know is that somehow I'm here to try to relieve the suffering of my fellow travelers in some small way, as I hold their pain in my role as a psychologist and a friend. As a young adult, it seemed at times that I struggled to find meaning in my life. I had fallen asleep despite these early experiences I had had as a child. I floundered for years with my unfulfilled form of Christianity and a brief flirtation with Buddhism. And then in a bolt of recognition, I knew I had come home to remembering. When I heard Cynthia's words in her beautiful little book, Mystical Hope. This hope is not tied to outcome, to the future, but has everything to do with presence, the immediate experience of having been met, held in communion, bearing fruit in the sensations of strength, joy, and an unbearable lightness of being. When I heard these words, I knew that I was continually being met and held. And now it was up to me to discover the ways in which to hold this state of recognition and seeing for more than an instant. Like many of us, I've been on a quest to answer two fundamental questions since I was a very young child. Why am I here? And how do I find my way? What began as simple childlike awe and wonder in the natural world has taken me on a lifetime quest to re-find and remember this embodied experience of God's love and divine purpose. The great question, why am I here, was a plaintive begging from my mother at the end of her life, in the midst of her great suffering. This was the moment that cracked open my heart to understand the answer to that existential question of why. I've told this story many times, some of you have heard it, and the simplicity of this answer never ceases to amaze me. As I did every day, I showered, I got up, I showed up to feed my mother her noontime meal at the assisted living facility. Because her body was twisted and broken from the ravages of Lewy body form of Parkinson's, she was nearly blind. She was unable to lift the spoon. Yet her mind was sharp and she was still fully engaged in life. As always, I was in pain watching her struggle to even swallow. And I had to listen carefully as she spoke in almost a whisper, "Why am I still here?" As I sat there holding her gnarled hand, I was speechless and brokenhearted, unable to give her solace, as I couldn't think of any reason why she should continue to suffer so. And then, surprisingly, there was a deep feeling of calmness settling in me, a sensation as if time had stopped and my heart was filled with a sense of well-being as I heard myself say, "You are here to become love." This unbidden response kind of shook me for a moment. Become love? It sounded odd somehow. Did I really mean to say it that way? And the answer was a clear yes. That's exactly the answer to what she was asking. And her face broke out in a beautiful smile of understanding. And she stayed that way until the end, becoming a luminous being radiating love. Now, in my simple meanderings and experiences, I've come to believe that we're each born in this particular time and place with an obligation to play our part in God's divine plan to manifest her great love into being. We have entered this incarnation into our own particular form of embodiment, some broken, short-lived, some physically and mentally gifted, and others, most of us, somewhere in between. And Cynthia speaks to this embodied nature of our transformation. The purpose of this entire divine journey into form is to make manifest the fullness of love, the innermost secret of the divine heart. The only way that we can begin to see with the eye of the heart is because we are biologically wired for this transformation of perception and awakening. Our brain and cognitive development follow this trajectory from birth to of under differentiated consciousness to a dualistic mind as we grow and become older. And finally, in our ego development, and finally, the highest level of integration of non-dual consciousness. This is a path of embodiment and form on this earth. Or more simply put, in the words of the poet Jan Hooper at the beginning of this chapter, please come home. Please come home into your own body, your own vessel, your own earth. Please come home into each and every cell, and fully into the space that surrounds you. These words, introducing our three-centered awareness chapter, is a good summation of this call to embrace our fullness with our mind, heart, and body in balance and alignment. There is an ancient understanding about the physiology of spiritual transformation in order to increase our receptivity to higher meaning and transformation. It's not about knowing more. It's about knowing with more of you. This knowledge has been transmitted for centuries throughout all the various streams of wisdom teachings and religions. And Jesus taught this from his own center, from a place of being fully present, fully surrendered, and tapping into that deep underground spring of mercy. And it is through this wisdom path of transformation implicit in our physiological structure that we can find the answer to the question of how. Most of my life, I've been fascinated with the incredibly brilliant and beautiful design of the brain and nervous system. Who knew? Who knew that my lifelong quest for spiritual, for meaning, was also tied up with my professional curiosity and study of how humans learn and develop? And in particular, what happens when this intricate balance is disrupted? I found a deep knowing and calling to my life purpose when I was 8 years old. In the midst of my own fragile grip on life, I somehow knew that if I were to survive, I would spend the rest of it in service of other humans who had somehow become incarnated into imperfect vessels in the world's view, broken bodies. I knew that I was here to walk alongside of them in love and solidarity. In my role as a psychologist, I've often been asked the question, what is healing? To me, it has become, on a psychological level, about balance, congruity, inner peace, rather than healing disease. On a spiritual level, the notion of healing fine-tunes our bodily instruments as vessels to receive God's gifts of spirit and bring them forth into the world. The physiology of spiritual transformation doesn't require that we become perfect specimens of bodies and minds. Rather, we're ultimately transforming our usual way of perception into seeing with the heart. So let's begin to take a look into this embodied practice of tuning our earthly containers into receptacles of divine love. Cynthia has so beautifully unfolded these teachings of the how of transformation through our human vessel and refinement of our nervous system into higher energetic states in her beautiful, beautiful many teachings. The notion that we're made up of three centers of intelligence runs throughout the wisdom teachings. Now, this isn't to conflate that these centers of knowing have an actual bodily equivalent or some notion of a triune brain. Most of us are familiar with the intellectual center. Most of us live there. It's the prized development of intelligence and thinking. I'm pretty good at this in this Western culture. To be sure, it's an important faculty for the acquisition of information and managing our daily tasks in this material horizontal world. Most of us in the Western world have learned to spend the greatest percentage of our focus on this faculty. Sometimes I feel like I'm a disembodied head, filtering everything through my thoughts and stories about myself, ignoring the sensations emanating from my body, or even worse, attributing these physical sensations to some nefarious disease condition. More about that later, and how it plays out in psychological suffering. It's an interesting phenomenon in my office to notice that very few people I encounter in therapy can identify how they're feeling. When I gently ask them to explain how they experience the pain of some loss or challenge, they invariably answer with a description about their thoughts, about themselves, their life situation. In many cases, they can't even begin to identify the physical sensations that accompany their suffering. How does anxiety? How does sadness feel in your body? Sadly, many of us have become mere containers of knowledge from our intellectual center rather than vehicles of transformation. We shut off the very source of information that can help us move into higher energetic states. In order for us to transform our suffering to higher meaning, we must utilize all of our hardwired physical faculties, the hardware of transformation. All of our centers must be working in balance and harmony as the underlying prerequisite of wisdom knowing. It's best to remember there is no wisdom coming from the neck up. The other two often underutilized and disregarded faculties of intelligence consist of the moving center and the emotional center. The moving center is the hardware of how we activate our instincts to regulate and sustain life, and how we move outward into voluntary interaction with the physical world through our five senses, through rhythm and movements as the software. One of the unique perceptive gifts of the moving center is the capacity to understand social gesture. The language of this sacred knowledge is conveyed through various forms of sacred physical interactions, learning about balance, letting go, trust, knowing something from the inside out. The language of spiritual transformation is written deeply in our body. This deeply embodied center is seen as the modality of reaching out, connecting, embracing, becoming part of each other. We might call it the affirming force, if you're familiar with the law of three. This is in contrast to the opposing or denying force of the intellectual center, which gives us doubt, reason, fine discrimination, contrast, and comparison, and pulls us into a smaller, mentally constructed sense of ourselves. From the intellectual center, we confuse being with thinking. Out of these two dualistic and often conflicting centers, these forces of constriction, expansion, push, pull, inside out, approach, avoid, we have the emotional center as the reconciling force, bringing it all into balance. This is not the seat of our passions or our soul. Psychotherapy actually works at the level of freeing one from the enslavement of these afflictive passions that Thomas Keating talks about, which these all diminish our being. But rather, a properly aligned emotional center enlivens the heart rather than dividing it into two-ness. The nervous system is part of the emotional center and must be conditioned to participate in the flood of divine grace and purpose streaming from higher energetic realms. As I keep saying, our practices strengthen us to be able to bear the intense energy of this burning love of God. It is within this emotional center that two poles of affirming and denying centers are reconciled to produce that unitive center, that non-dual, seen through the eye of the heart. And this allows us to comprehend the language of paradox, parables, both and holding ambiguity. This is the place from which Jesus taught. It is also the connection, the bridge between the mind and the body, between our physical world and the invisible realms. When the horizontal and vertical axes are properly attuned through balance of these three centers, we're in presence, alert with a shift in consciousness. We come from a deeper, steadier, quieter place. This is the place that allowed Peter to walk on water when he was summoned by Jesus. But as soon as he lost this congruence with the three-centered presence, he sank into the water. It's important to distinguish this embodied state of presence from the ecstasy, the temporary states of dreams and trances, the floating away feeling and great beauty. It's easy to get seduced by these trance-like states or even hypomanic states and mistake them for spiritual transformation. Rather, we're talking about holding a state of attention, ecstasy, as Cynthia says, of strength, of balance, of all centers online to reach a stabilized energetic state of being. We need both sides of the riverbank of flowing wisdom in order to see from the heart. When one is unconsciously or exclusively only in one center, we're in a state of sleep at a lower energetic frequency. It is only in a balanced state of integration that our fullness of being can access the wisdom way of knowing. So we each arrive in our own unique way of being in presence in our centers. And we each must find our own pathway that best suits our journey into wholeness and transformation. Some find it in music, some in the garden, others riding the waves on a surfboard. Perhaps you can find your balance, your three centers, while dipping your toes in the ocean. Others, perhaps, over a shared cup of coffee with a friend or creating a work of art. Whatever your manner of aligning your energetic state into a vessel of transformation, remember that at the deepest wellspring of mercy, we are all interconnected and fractals, unique fractals of God's love, no matter in which the way we arrived. And it is in this three-centered knowing that is the foundational piece of the curriculum of wisdom schools. And it consists of deep sensing of the body in order to awaken this aliveness and presence. One of my earliest discoveries as a child was that I could find this state of being and wholeness in connection with the animal world, in particular with horses. And this has become a powerful modality of psychotherapy and healing from trauma with my patients. And think about what Job said. But now ask the beasts, and they will teach you, or the birds in the sky, and they will tell you, or speak to the earth, and it will teach you, or let the fish and sea inform you. Which of all these does not know the hand of the Lord has done? In his hand is the life of every creature and the breath of all mankind. And I continue to recognize this pathway for myself personally, as I experience the power of these encounters to heal and hold suffering. Teilhard speaks of the increasing personal nature of evolution of consciousness. The highest manifestation of divine nature unfolds within a relational field. And my experience in this relational field continues to be the most potent as I enter into a purely sensate field of presence, as I'm welcome into relationship with the herd of these magnificent creatures. At the most basic level of understanding is the role that horses play in the ability to become fully present and to experience direct perception. This is essential for the ability to survive and live in harmony within the herd, safe from predators. It is through the intensified interaction with horses that we can begin to focus and eventually direct our attention. When we're out of alignment and presence, there's a direct feedback as the horses react to our incongruity. Stepping into close proximity to the presence of these imposing beasts evokes an enlivened sense of awareness due to their enlarged and refined energy field. As prey animals, they have to constantly maintain a sense of equilibrium, the tension between relaxation and hyper-awareness, attention and surrender. As predators and humans, we have not fully developed this capacity to hold such attention, but rather vacillate between the polarities of our sympathetic and parasympathetic nervous systems. It is when we become overly fearful that we're unable to discharge this fight, flight, freeze, rise of excessive adrenaline and cortisol and return to homeostasis once the danger has passed. We're left with the afflictive states of anxiety, dissociation from ourselves, a state of unresolved trauma. And yet it is the gift of energetic regulation that horses, I have found, can give us as we enter into their subtle energetic field and come more fully into the sensation of our own bodies. This embodied presence enables us to experience firsthand the world as it really is, dynamic, fluid, vibrant, still, solid, and alive. And it is in this state of awareness that time slows, space expands, and we begin to feel alive. And now I'd like to just share, as we finish our discussion this morning, my little small part as I participate in this healing field of energy and invite you to step into this magical structure of consciousness within this timeless horse time that I have been so privileged to experience in my life. This exchange of refined energy within the mutual heart fields of humans and horses yields powerful effects on calming and well-being. And it's this visceral connection that also allows us to activate our bodily presence, inviting alignment into embodied awareness, recentered awareness. In activating this magical nonverbal consciousness, we become authentic and congruent, a state the horses instantly recognize and reflect back with their behavior. And the energy is then clarified and refined, permeating this thin curtain between species in order to merge and synchronize into a coherent whole. And this has become apparent to me over the past 30 years as I've been doing this work. And most recently, I've been in working with some traumatized veterans who have been seeking solace and healing in the presence of horses. As we prepare to hear about the power of connection to heal, I'd like to share just some images from my interactions over the years with these horses and what we call sometimes broken bodies and minds and souls. notice the balance and congruity through three-centered awareness from these glimpses into horse time. And Tim, would you show that little slideshow? Thank you. And now I'd like to just share briefly one story, a heartfelt story about one of these beautiful souls that I've been able to work with and treat, and how our three centers can become disconnected and lead to distress and a lowered band of energetic presence and suffering. So listen from your heart and try to identify the three-centered awareness in this little story. It's a reflection that I wrote a few weeks ago after a moving session with a very traumatized veteran and a horse. We have to go ahead for another retreat. Oh, wonderful. We get to go and work with these veterans. With those words, my heart soared in anticipation of journeying to this little ranch in the Pacific Northwest, which has become a place of solace and renewal for a number of war veterans suffering from psychological and spiritual ravages of their service. This work has been truly, truly transforming. As my plane touched down, my joyful excitement at returning was tempered with a little anxiety, knowing that the weather was going to be a barrier to our work outside of the arena. The next day, we gathered at our now familiar retreat sanctuary, surrounded by our welcoming fuzzy horses, beginning to shed their warm winter coats. The dank smell of wet fur assailed my senses as I stepped outside and walked past the soggy paddocks, sticky with muck and mud. Although we had expected a full enrollment of fragile veterans, the drizzly early morning rain was enough to deter our elderly men, who still carried their scars from the Vietnam War of over 50 years. Today wouldn't be the day to face their demons and shiver in the rain simultaneously. Instead, we greeted the remainder of the contingent, two gentlemen who were eager, if not a bit fearful, to face the day in the company of these imposing equine therapists. Generally, our introductions take a superficial tone as we come together as strangers, with the only commonality being the pain of traumatic response to the military experience. But not today. For whatever reason he might have had, this short and somewhat out of shape, visibly shaking and rather shy, middle-aged man dove right into his pain. Bypassing the usual introductory neutral pieces of information, he quietly mouthed, "I'm here because I can't seem to find myself." My breath caught and my heart skipped a beat. How could I even begin to help this suffering human? He continued to bear his pain in an almost whispered voice. "I have depersonalization disorder, and I can't function most of the time. I don't know if I'm real. It never goes away. but today I managed to get here hoping I can experience some relief from my pain. Oh, my heart sank even further as I listened to his anguish, believing that we weren't equipped to handle this severe disorder of disconnection from himself in this short introductory session of equine-assisted psychotherapy. This was supposed to be a day of rest and retreat for our traumatized veterans, but apparently that was rapidly changing. We didn't really fully understand, how one becomes disconnected from emotions, thoughts, identity, memory, feeling. It's if you're watching your life as if it's someone else's movie. In this condition, one may become numb to sensations, unable to control movement, even have difficulty attaching oneself to memories, emotions, or even the physical body. It may feel as if the body is distorted, the head is wrapped in cotton. For our new friend, these symptoms were persistent and often rendered him incapable of day-to-day functioning. Over the course of his experience, he recollected he'd learned to assign a number of 1 to 5 from his distress. And he said, "Today I'm at a 3. I've never been a 0. This temporary state enabled him to even venture out. My co-therapist and I exchanged worried glances. How can we help him? This distress may be too much to handle in this setting. However, his eyes, brimming with tears, beseech me to give him a chance to find a way to reconnect himself into wholeness. Our eyes met and we silently mouthed, "Let's trust the horses to help us find a way." As we stood together, observing the unbridled energy of these two massive red horses kicking out, rearing in mock fight and racing in circles in the arena, I could feel the constriction and fear and reticence to engage. "Are you sure you want to go in? Are you sure you want to go in with them?" Yet his longtime suffering eventually overrode any hesitancy, and we entered the closed arena together once the horses had been settled and haltered. Our first task was simply to approach the horse of his choice and get acquainted. I carried a grooming bucket filled with brushes for him to use as a means of connecting in a visceral kinesthetic way of soothing to both beings. "Brush in the direction the hair grows and he'll start to relax from your attention." What was supposed to be a calming, soothing experience for both of them soon became a source of distress and agitation for the horse, who was becoming increasingly nervous, throwing his head and moving his feet, unable to stand still. Why is he shaking his head and moving his feet? The answer to that question was obvious. There was a noticeable disconnect between the actions, his words, and his emotional state. Clearly, the horse was signaling that this connection didn't feel safe with this veteran. He wanted to escape this uneasy field of energy. This fragile man was unable to be even minimally present and was unaware of how his actions were disconnected from his intention. In order to move into the horse's usual calm, energetic state, it's necessary to be embodied in 3-centered awareness, grounded in sensation, and directed by conscious attention. It was apparent that our new friend was unable to find this inner and outer balance. Clearly, this incongruity was distressing the horse, whom by his very nature lives his life in authenticity and congruity of presence and behavior. I immediately realized we must break into this unbalanced state before the impulse to flee took over and the horse's instinctive response put us in danger. It was clearly apparent that the missing ingredient of this interaction was the engagement with the moving or kinesthetic center of awareness. This disembodied human had long forgotten what it felt like to be grounded in his body. Trauma in extreme forms often pulls one out of embodiment and leads to a state of dissociation, and in some extreme cases, a sense of an unreal person. At that moment, I knew with a gut sense and certainty that we must start moving to start this process of regulation. The horse has the ability to move one beyond this disynchronous state of harmonic connection into a harmonic connection, thus enabling the healing of wholeness to begin. We held the lead rope together for security, and he tentatively started walking next to me as we cautiously led the horse around the arena. Take a breath and walk beside me, matching your step with the horse's feet. The obvious disconnect and distress on the part of the horse continued for a few moments, but then soon the energetic field surrounding our marching threesome. We all started to slow our respiration rate until it felt as if we were in synchrony. Our footsteps began to harmonize into a noticeable rhythm, with our feet sinking into the soft sand, crunching beneath each step we took. I felt a palatable lightness of energy, yet at the same time, a sense of groundedness and strength that rose up within my body. I glanced sideways at my companion and could feel the transformation within him as well. And the horse was now fully attentive and engaged in a subtle, almost playful interaction. He let out that wonderful soothing sound of loose flapping lips, blowing out the breath, signaling relaxation, a state of contentment. We all recognize that as horse people, as pure pleasure. This state of embodiment grew as we continued our trek around the arena until the veteran felt confident enough to take over his own without my assistance. By the conclusion of our time with the horse, he was encouraging the horse to trot around him in a circle with total trust and confidence, giving subtle nonverbal body cues, which are impossible to achieve in a state of disharmony and disconnection. Watching him with his now bonded companion, I observed a noticeable change in both of them. Our formerly dejected, hunched over, disconnected veteran stood tall and firmly grounded, his movements synchronized, fluid, and aligned with his intentions. The horse was swinging his body in relaxation, a softness in his gaze. My heart leapt in gratitude as I saw a wide smile and heard these words. For the first time in my memory, I feel whole and in my body. I've never been so peaceful, and I finally found myself. I remember who I am. So, now I'd like to leave you with just a final little meditation. And I'd love to leave you with a wordless example of pure presence, pouring out from the energetic balance of two beings in perfect harmony and connection. I'm going to share with you a glimpse into love pouring out from a four-year-old child with a severely limited intellectual center and yet fully embodied. So I'd like to bring you, just start with a short meditation to bring us all into a centered, full-bodied, and three-centered embodied presence. So if you will just, for a moment, sit very quietly. I'm sitting tall with gentle attention on the straightness and firmness of your spine. Take in a breath and begin to notice any sensations arising from deep within your body. Gently moving your attention from the top of your head all the way down from your toes. Noticing the sensations coming from within your body. Any places of openness and relaxation. Expanding the sensations throughout your body. Becoming aware of increasing sensations of aliveness and lightness as you drop all thoughts and stories about your experience, and just allowing the pure physical sensations to arise without judgment or trying to change anything. Now moving your attention to your breath, noticing the energetic activation of your being as you breathe in the life-giving substances of oxygen and higher spiritual substances. And on the out-breath, noticing the invitation to release, to surrender, and move into a state of rest as you release these substances into the greater world. And now I invite you to bring your moving center into this state of presence as we harmonize all three centers in a symphony of holy exchange of energy. On the in-breath, gently say the word I with a gesture of remembering your sacred presence. And on the out-breath, releasing your gift of wholeness into the greater good with a gesture, giving gently, saying, am, remembering your true self. I am. I am. Continuing this gentle practice of awareness and balance for a few moments as you bring yourself into a higher state of receiving the gifts of the Spirit of divine love, and holding this stance of aliveness as we watch this little video of a dance of love. Okay, Tim.
I was run down and tired, broken and crying. I've always admired your strength and fight in you as I watch you collide with all the same.
Thank you.
Thank you, Marianne, for sending us off to breakout groups in tears. Appreciate that. Just kidding. But I'm